Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, June the 24th. We got a lot of rain last night. I think we're going to get a little bit more over the next 24 or 48 hours. Well, today we're going to be catching up with what's happening with President Trump and Iran. There's a lot of back and forth between former Vice President Biden and his Democrat opponents. They're going to have a debate later this week. We'll see how that goes. We'll talk a little bit about this deportation situation that became extremely relevant, I guess, a few days ago, and then they backed it down. I'm not exactly sure what they're doing, but it has gotten a great deal of publicity. But speaking of the Democrats, why don't we begin there? Because obviously the Democrats right now are, well, they're getting ready for their first debate. And they have a real dilemma because they've got 20 people, 24, whatever the number is. I don't think all of them are going to be in the debate. They're going to be two nights, I think it is, 10 and 10 or 12 and 12, something like that. And this is not really a very suitable format for a debate. It's more of a everybody's on stage and everybody gets to answer a question, and I don't think there's going to be a lot of back and forth or follow-up. So it's not exactly the most suitable way of having a debate. So that's why I think it benefits Vice President Biden or former Vice President Biden, because he's the one that has the most to lose, but he's only going to have maybe 6 minutes of talking time the whole night. So that's why I think he's probably benefiting from this kind of a format. The ones who I think are in real trouble are, you know, there's 24, let's say the bottom 10 or 12, who are single digits, going nowhere. And in the case of Mayor Pete, apparently dealing with some of his own local problems that may very well derail his campaign altogether. But I saw a story, though, for all the attention that these debates are getting, I mean, not the debates, but the primary, for all the attention that everything you read about these Democrats in social media and in cable news, and obviously if you're a political junkie, you're very much on top of this because you're hearing over and over and over again what Bernie Sanders is promising, what Elizabeth Warren is promising, and so on. But I thought the most interesting bit of information is a poll that just came out from the AP and another organization, I guess they do their polls with. And the information is fascinating because it really shows you the problem, the dilemma that these Democrats have. And I'm just going to read you directly from the story itself. It says, only 22% of Democrats registered to vote say that they know a lot about the candidate's position, while 62% say they know a little. Only 35% say they're paying close attention to the campaign, and almost two-thirds saying that they're paying some or no attention at all. Now, that's, to me, I was actually quite stunned by this poll. Now, again, it's only a poll, and we know in the past that, you know, you always have to be cautious. You don't want to put all your eggs in one basket when it comes to one poll. But what this poll is saying to me is that there's a lot of Democrats out there who are not following this. For all the attention, for all the time we devote to this, for all the time that cable news devotes to this, I mean, look, CNN and MSNBC are practically 24/7. With these campaigns, and yet so many Democrats, voters that is, are not really tuning in. So I think that tells me that the Democrats have a real, in my opinion, a real problem of persuading their own voters that one of these people is going to be able to run for president, or that one of these people is let's say, capable of beating President Trump. Now, clearly, the one that they believe can do it is Vice President Biden. They think that he's the one. They may not like him. In fact, most people don't in the party. But they see him as, you might say, the one and only who can compete with President Trump. The problem is that he's now coming under attack by the Democrats. The Democrats are basically tearing him up. And you know, it's funny because I think a lot of these attacks are desperate on the part of people like Senator Booker But they're also extremely unfair. Let me explain what I mean. It is possible. I mean, I don't know the entire career of Joe Biden. I know he's been around for 40 years, and I know he's taken a lot of different positions about a lot of different things. And that's what senators do, by the way, because senators are often voting on this or this or this or that. And sometimes you vote one way, you vote the other way, and that's just the way it is in the U.S. Senate. That's why I'm not a big fan of U.S. senators running for president, because I'd rather have a governor who has executive experience than a senator who's got years of speeches. But anyway, Senator Biden came into the Senate in the 70s, and he came in at a time when the Democrat Party was still very much of many of these committees in the U.S. Senate were run by Southern Democrats. And these were Southern Democrats from the old segregation days. So you had to work with these people. I mean, you had to sit down and work with them. You had to, you know, if you wanted to do any, if you wanted to get anything done in the U.S. Senate, you had to sit down and work with a U.S. senator who was from a state, let's say, or maybe a U.S. senator who had voted against the Civil Rights Act of 1964, or who had voted against the Voting Rights Act, or a U.S. senator that had opposed the 1954, you know, decision, Supreme Court decision regarding school segregation. I mean, it was inevitable not to work with these people, and obviously Senator Biden, in order to get things done, had to work with him. And now he's being criticized for having done so, or for not, or for saying that he had worked with these people. Look, he could have chosen a better way to say it, I'll grant you that. One of the problems with Vice President Biden is that he often says a lot of things that don't make a lot of sense. I think sometimes he doesn't quite think before he speaks. But anyway, I don't believe the man is a racist, and I don't think there's anything wrong with the man having worked with what, as he calls them, segregationists in the Democrat Party back in the 60s or 70s or the 80s or whatever. That's just the way it was. And when you're the senator of Delaware, like Vice President Biden was, you don't get to pick who the senator from Mississippi or Alabama is. You don't get to pick who these people are, but you do have to work with them if you want to get anything done. You got to be able to sit down and work with them, and that's all he was doing. And now he's being criticized for that. I think that's very unfair, but I think it really shows you, number one, the desperation of many of the Democrats running against him, but also it shows you where the Democrat Party is going or where it is. It is really right now a party very much pandering to the left wing, the extreme left wing of the party. You know, you got Elizabeth Warren saying that she wants to have reparations, I guess, for homosexuals. You now have Senator Sanders saying he wants, he wants to cancel all college debts or loans or whatever. I mean, this is clearly a party that is pandering to the left wing of the party. And maybe this is the reason why so many Democrat voters don't seem to be that excited about this campaign. They don't seem to be that, at least according to that poll I just shared with you, they don't seem to be that excited about the campaign. And maybe why would you be excited? Why would you be excited about a campaign that is basically just making a bunch of promises that every one of these guys knows that these are promises that are not going to be able to keep? I mean, they're just basically pandering to the left. And I think a lot of voters are hearing stuff like that and saying, you know what, I don't like President Trump. I'm not going to vote for President Trump, but I'm not crazy about these people either. I need a better candidate, and that's why I think that's the reason why I think you're beginning to see these polls that basically say that you know, a lot of Democrats really are not that aware of these candidates, and they're not really paying that much attention. Now, maybe that'll change after the debate on Thursday night. I don't know. Maybe it will. But I can tell you right now, I think this is not a good Democrat a good Democrat team of candidates. That much I can tell you. We'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. We say happy number 72 to Mick Fleetwood. He was the drummer, or he is the drummer, I should say, and the founder of Fleetwood Mac, one of the great rock groups from the 70s, I guess into the 80s as well. They were really a great group. Let's talk a little bit about President Trump and deportations and sanctions with Iran. Look, I'm going to give President Trump, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt for the moment on Iran. Look, I'm not a fan of Iran. I think they're a horrible country, and what they've done with terrorism is unforgivable. But I'm going to give President Trump a little bit of benefit here, benefit of the doubt, and let's see how these sanctions work. Let's see if we can bring about the exact same effect by using these sanctions. Now, he signed some executive orders today, and the sanctions are going to be tougher than they were before. I think they're actually going after the leader of the country, going after his own personal accounts. I'm all for that. I'm okay with that. And so let's see how that works. Let's see if this policy works. We may have to come back and drop a few bombs, and if we have to, we have to. But I give President Trump credit for holding back on that right now and saying, let's give these sanctions a little bit more of a chance. These sanctions are going to be pretty tough. They're already very tough on Iran, and look at the economics of Iran, not exactly doing very well. So let me give President Trump the benefit of the doubt on Iran, and let's see what happens with these sanctions. On deportations, I am a little bit surprised by the reaction to deportations. Look, I never thought that we were going to deport 11 million people. I never thought it would be like that. But we're talking about deporting people who may be criminal elements or people who have decided not to obey a deportation notice. They get a letter from the judge that says, hey, you got to leave the country. You know, we've looked at your case, and we have not accepted your case, and you have to leave the country. Well, people like that who are openly defying a court case or a court letter or whatever, why are we not deporting them? Why do we even have to explain why we're deporting people like that? It makes absolutely no sense. Now, look, if I got a letter from a judge saying I got to do this, or jury duty comes to mind, that's not a letter from a judge, but it is a civic duty that I have, as any other citizen has. I get a letter about jury duty, I got to respond to it. I can't just throw it away, because there's consequences if I don't respond to it. There's consequences if I don't pay a parking ticket, or I get a letter saying that I got to pay a parking ticket because I don't pay it. There's consequences. So these are legal documents, and there are consequences for not respecting them. So if there are people who are defying deportation notices, why are we even talking about their deportation? They should be deported immediately. That's just the way it goes. I don't understand, you know, Nancy Pelosi talking about scaring the children. Well, come on, Nancy Pelosi, you know better than that. We're not talking about deporting children. We're talking about deporting people who shouldn't be in the country in the first place and who are violating a court order. I wonder how many people in Nancy Pelosi's district can defy a court order without consequence. Finally, I want to talk to you a little bit about the Berlin airlift from 1948. Had a little time to read about this the other day. This is truly one of the great moments of presidential leadership in the 20th century. It happened under President Truman. West Berlin at the time was inside East Germany, and the Soviets decided to basically choke West Berlin by not allowing any supplies or anything to come in. So, I mean, the people were literally running out of food, and President Truman decided to do an airlift. So we used American aircraft and the British as well, and we brought in supplies and food and even candy for the children. That's another beautiful part of the story. Eventually, the Soviets broke, and in May of 1949, they decided to end the blockade. And West Berlin was allowed to exist normally, and food was allowed in and all of that. But it was really one of the great moments of presidential leadership. And I tell you, if you haven't read anything about it, I would recommend it. There are some good books and there are some good things. But again, to me, the Berlin airlift was just a great example of presidential leadership. And in this case, it happened to be President Truman, who was, of course, a pretty strong leader, as we remember. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.
Thank you.